listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Barry Craig, confidential investigator, with Death Buys a Bedroom. But first, on the lighter side, let's head on over to Summerfield and spend some time with the Great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve was created by Harold Perry while working on Fibber McGee and Molly in Chicago. The character became so popular that in August of 1941, Gildersleeve broke away for his own Sunday night NBC program. The Great Gildersleeve is thought to be the first radio show based on a supporting character from another competing program. For 13 years, the program was sponsored by Kraft Foods. As the program approached its 10th anniversary, Harold Perry tired of the role and eventually retired. Into Perry's shoes came Willard Waterman, whose interpretation of Gildy was so much like the original, it was startling. For the 1954-55 season, the program became a daily 15-minute show, with each episode loosely connected. The program returned to 30 minutes in 1955 and continued on Thursdays until 1958. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Great Gildersleeve and Aunt Hattie Stays On from February of 1945. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Great Gildersleeve.
You bet.
Kraft Cheese Company, makers of Parquet Margarine and a complete line of famous quality food products, presents Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. Kraft brings you the Great Gildersleeve every week at this time, written by John Wheaton and Sam Moore, with music by Claude Sweeten.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative.
Well, Gildersleeve appears to be in fine spirits this morning, and a pretty fair voice. What's come over him anyway? He's up before daylight, in his bathroom shaving. Yes, believe it or not, the clock stands at 10 to 7. The mercury stands at 2 below 0. The coal bin stands 3/4 empty, and his bank account stands $11 overdrawn. What does he care?
You got to ask. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative.
Uncle Mort.
Come in, my dear.
What's going on?
Well, a delegation. Good morning, Marjorie. Good morning, Leroy. Good morning, one and all.
Shh, you wake Aunt Hattie.
Oop.
What's got into you, Unc? You're not as gruesome as you were. Yes, what is it?
Step inside and close the door. Children?
Yes?
You got to accentuate.
Oh, come on, Unc. What is it?
Children? Your uncle is the bearer of glad tidings.
What do you mean?
Your Aunt Hattie, may her tribe increase, has decided that her mission here is accomplished.
She's not going home.
She's going home.
Shh,
quiet, quiet. Let sleeping dogs lie. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. That's no way to talk about Aunt Hattie. Don't ever let me hear you talk that way about Aunt Hattie, Leroy.
No, sir.
Very kind of your aunt to come here and look after you like this. That's no way to talk about her. You understand?
What a character. You took the words right out of my mouth. When's she going, Uncle Mort?
I don't know. In a few days. As soon as she can get a ticket. But we mustn't rush her, you understand? I don't want you to say anything about this. Not a word.
Okay.
Now, hand me that mug, will you, my dear? Where's my... Leroy, give me that brush.
Can I mix accept the lather, Unc?
No, you may not.
Why?
Because I prefer to do it myself. You may go now, children.
Oh, can't we stay and watch?
Yeah, let us watch, Unc.
What is there to watch?
You look so funny when you shave. You make such funny faces.
Well, I have to make faces. Go on out. I can't shave with people watching me.
Oh, please.
Please, Unc.
Well, you keep out of the way.
Don't forget under your chin, Uncle Mort.
Which chin?
Yep. Listen, you, I've been shaving myself for 30 years now, and I don't need any advice. Yeah? Who's there?
It's me, Mr. Gillespie, Bertie.
Open the door, Leroy.
I didn't want to disturb you, I just...
What's the matter? Ever seen a man shave before, Bertie?
Excuse me, Mr. Gillespie. I heard you stirring around up here, and I wondered how soon you wanted breakfast.
I'll be ready in 7 1/2 minutes, Bertie.
Yes, sir. How about her? Is she up yet?
Miss Forrester.
Bertie, she's leaving.
Shh!
Leaving?
Not so loud, Bertie. But it's true. Miss Forrester is leaving.
Hallelujah! David, this is the turning point.
Yeah.
That just goes to show, Mr. Gillespie, that shows the power of prayer.
Well, you keep right on praying, Bertie. But in the meantime, how about a little breakfast?
Mr. Gillespie, it strikes me that this is the time for buckwheat cakes and sausages.
Oh, man.
Come on out here, you children. Let your uncle shave and you'll get dressed. Breakfast in 10 minutes, you hear?
Okay, Bertie.
You got to accentuate the positive.
That, Mr. Gillespie.
Eliminate the negative.
Latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
Well, sir, I'm stuffed, and I don't care who knows it.
I'll have a couple more, Bertie, if you got them there.
Leroy, how do you do it?
I'm a growing boy.
You're a bottomless pit.
Doorbell.
Well, I'll go, Bertie. I'm nearly through.
Don't be bashful, Bertie. Pack them up.
You ain't guilty.
Oh, you judge. Come on in. Yep. Come on in. You're letting in the cold.
Yes. Frosty out.
Your nose looks like a tomato.
Morning, Marjorie. Leroy.
Morning, Judge.
Leroy? Judge Hooker said good morning.
Good morning. Would you care for a cup of coffee, Judge? Warm you up.
No, thank you, Bertie. One cup is my limit. I've already had two.
Yep. Come on in the living room, Horace. Take off your earmuffs.
Can't stay, Gildy. I gotta get down to the office. I just dropped in to get your proxy.
My proxy? For what?
For the meeting tonight. The Jolly Boys Social Club. We're holding an election of officers, and I knew you wouldn't be able to attend, so I thought I'd
Now, wait a minute. What makes you think I won't be able to attend?
Well, will you?
Well, as a matter of fact, no, I don't think I can. Now, what's so funny?
My golly, Gilly, she certainly got you tied to her apron string.
Oh, is that so? I'd come if I wanted to. Only I don't want to.
Say, you.
Might interest you to know, you old goat, that Hattie is going home in a day or so. And being a gentleman...
Says you.
I am too polite to leave her alone on the last night of her visit.
Says you.
Listen, you old parrot, never mind the witty repartee. You haven't even been polite enough to meet her. If you were any kind of a friend, you'd help me out a little with her.
And if you were any kind of a friend, you wouldn't ask it.
What do you know about her?
As much as I care to.
All right.
I take it I have your proxy then to vote as I see fit tonight.
You certainly have not.
Oh, now, Gildy.
I know you. You'd vote for yourself.
I have no personal ambitions, Gildy. But if elected, I shall strive to serve to the best of my ability.
Listen, who started that club?
Surely you're not thinking of yourself for president.
Well, I don't know why not.
A man who can't even attend meetings. A man who's so tied down at home that
Who's
he...
tied down? I tell you...
Ron Martin!
Yes, Hattie?
I wonder if you'd bring up my eyeglasses. I left them downstairs last night when we were playing cribbage.
Yes, Hattie. All right, laugh, you old goat. You just wait till you need a friend. Scheming old goat. I start the club and he wants to run it. Why, George, if I could get down there tonight.
Why don't you just go, Uncle Mort?
What? Leave Aunt Hattie all alone? On her last night here? Oh, no, my dear. That wouldn't be very nice. If there's anything I hate, it's a schemer.
She's coming downstairs.
Huh? I remember what I told you. No remarks about her leaving. And for goodness sake, be polite. Or she'll think she's got to stay and start work on you all over again.
Don't worry.
You too, Marjorie.
Yes, Uncle Mort.
Yeah, well, good morning, Hattie.
Good morning, Aunt Hattie.
Good morning, Aunt Hattie.
Good morning, everyone.
Did you have a good night's sleep, Aunt Hattie?
Why, yes, Leroy. I did, thank you.
That's good. I was afraid noisy children might wake you up, so I didn't let anybody play in the front yard.
Well, that was very thoughtful, Leroy.
Yeah, that's me. How are you feeling now, Aunt Hattie?
Feeling? Why, I feel fine, Leroy. Why?
That's good. Just wanted to know. Have you had breakfast, Aunt Hattie? Or could I get you some?
Oh, Bertie brought my breakfast up to me on a tray, thank you.
Well, I hope it was satisfactory.
Oh, yes. The egg was a little harder than I liked them. But then things can't be perfect.
No reason why not?
Yeah. Better speak to Bertie about that, Uncle Throckmorton.
I don't usually approve of staying in bed for breakfast. But once in a great while, I like to pamper myself and rest up in the morning. Especially before a long journey.
Going somewhere, Aunt Hattie?
Yes, I'm afraid I have to, Leroy. I've got to be getting home.
Oh, gee. Did you hear that, Marge? Aunt Hattie's gone home. Shucks.
Leroy.
I suppose I really ought to be doing something about getting train reservations, Throckmorton.
Train? Well, must you go, Hattie?
Yeah. Couldn't you stay another week, Auntie?
Look, little Lord Fauntleroy. Why don't you run along, you and your sister? Aunt Hattie and I have a few things to talk about.
Come on, Leroy. We'll see you at lunch, Aunt Hattie.
Yeah, see you at lunch. I get to sit next to Aunt Hattie, Marge.
You've certainly done wonders with those children, Hattie.
I hope it lasts. Oh, by the way, Throckmorton, there's something I've had on my mind.
Oh? What's that?
It's about the children.
Yes?
Have you ever considered what would happen to them in the event that you, passed on?
Passed on?
Died.
I'm not going to die.
Yes, but if you did, you ought to consider that, you know. What provision is made for them in the event of your demise?
Demise? Well, I don't remember exactly, Hattie. It's all in the thing there, the whatchamacallit, the, you know, the legal papers.
I must say you don't seem very clear about it, but if you say it's taken care of...
Wait a minute. Maybe you'd like to talk to Judge Hooker about this.
Well, it's no business of mine. You're the children's guardian.
No, I think you've got a very good point there, Hattie. The judge is a regular bearcat on all that legal stuff. Tell you what I'll do. I'll call him right up.
Well, I didn't mean
to. Oh, the judge would love to talk to you about it. I'll ask him to come over this evening.
Are you sure he wouldn't mind?
Mind? He's been dying to meet you. Oh, you'll be crazy about the judge. A wonderful fellow and a great mind. Yeah, the old schemer. If there's anything I hate, it's a schemer. Hello. Is Judge Hooker there? Well, put him on, please. This is Mr. Gildersleeve. Judge just came into his office. Hello, Judge. Gildy. Judge, I wonder if you could come over to my house this evening on a matter of business. Yeah, it has to do with the estate. Miss Forrester would like to discuss... Now, wait a minute. I don't care what social engagements you have.
Oh, it's not convenient. Tell him...
This is business, Judge, and it's mighty important. Either you're the executor of this estate or you're not. Which is it? Well, you get over here, understand?
Yeah. Is he coming?
Oh, the judge says he'd be delighted.
Hi.
Yes, sir. If there's anything I hate, it's a schemer.
Yeah. Greg Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few seconds.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve, that crafty fellow. It's a little before 8 o'clock in the evening, and we find him with his hat and coat on, his hand on the knob of his front door, about to make what looks like a getaway.
Hattie, you're sure you don't mind my going out for a few minutes?
Not at all, Throckmorton. Not if this meeting is as important as you say.
Oh, you were going to an important meeting, huh?
Very important. It's with the chief of police, Mr. Gates, and Mr. Munson, and, well, it's a little group of professional men. Be careful of that cold, Leroy. We wouldn't want Aunt Hattie to have to nurse you through an illness, would we?
Oh, I'm all right, Unc, honest.
Just watch it. Well, Hattie, you won't be alone. Judge Hooker will be arriving in a few minutes, and you'll be crazy about him.
Oh, I'm sure he's very nice.
Oh, he is. Well, I'll be going. Leroy, in case I don't get back before you're in bed, good night.
Good night, Uncle Mort.
See you later, Hattie. Oh, one more thing. If you should finish up your legal business before I get back. Judge Hooker just loves cribbage.
Well.
Yeah. Goodbye now.
Well, that's a catchy name of that.
You know, Chief, it's the song the burglar sang to the policeman, Don't Fence Me In.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That opera singer sings it every week on the radio. Yeah, real pretty tune. You know the prisoner's song? Oh, if I had the wings of an angel.
Oh, get your mind off of business, Chief. We're here to relax tonight.
I'm relaxed. Oh, I understand we're going to have an election of officers.
Oh, Hooker speak to you, too?
Oh, he said something about it.
I think the old windbag wants to be the president.
Well, why not? I think he'd make a pretty good president. Give the club a little dignity.
Are you kidding? This club wouldn't have no dignity if Patrick Henry was the president.
Hello!
Gildersleeve.
Speaking of windbags.
Are there any Charlie boys up there?
There are two here now, Commissioner.
With him, that's three and a half.
Well, well, good evening, Charlie boy. Remember me? Gildersleeve's the name.
Glad to see you, Commissioner.
Have a chair, Commissioner. Thought your sister-in-law had you locked up for tonight. What'd you do, shinny down the rain pipe?
I simply announced I was going to a meeting, Floyd. I announced it in loud, clear tones.
Yeah, I know them tones. Do you mind if I go to a meeting tonight, lovey-dovey?
Well, I'm here anyway, fellas. And the judge is trapped for the evening.
Oh, now, Gildersleeve, I don't know whether you should have done that or not. The judge has his heart set on this election.
What do we want with a president anyway?
Well, we should have a secretary, too.
Get a secretary, he's got to write letters.
All we want to do is play a little poker.
Just the same, I say Hooker'd be a good president.
Tell me, Chief, what office did he promise you? The reason I mention it, he promised...
We said he'd make me secretary. By that old double-crosser. The thing makes a man lose his faith in human nature.
Oh, are we sure Hooker is human?
Right. Now.
Second the nomination.
I third it.
Too bad, Peavy. You just missed the election.
Again?
Yeah, but you're just in time for a toast to the victorious candidate.
Yes, yes, that's right. Everybody have a quick one, then we'll play some poker. Open them up, Floyd.
Coming up. Here you are, Commissioner.
Oop. This one's got a top on it.
Chief.
Thanks.
And one for the Peeve and one for me. Hey, they're nice and cold.
Yes, I have them sitting out on the windows here all afternoon.
Gentlemen, a toast. Judge Hooker, the finest dog catcher this club ever had.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Well, what did I tell you, gents? Here it is, almost 10 o'clock, and no Hooker.
Sitting there with that old battle axe. I bet he's fit to be tied.
If you don't mind, Floyd, my sister-in-law is not a battle axe.
No offense, Commissioner.
She's a woman of character.
That's what I said.
And every inch a lady. Isn't that right, Peavy?
Oh, absolutely.
Peavy knows her. She's one of his best customers. Isn't she, Peavy?
She's been a very good customer on your charge account.
Yeah, well, that'll stop soon. She's leaving.
Say, fellas, is this a ladies' coffee clutch or the Jolly Boys? How about some poker?
Yeah. What about a little card?
Whenever you're ready, gents. Last round starts at 12 sharp.
Gentlemen, if I may, I'd like to propose another form of entertainment.
Not poker? What's the matter with you, Peavy?
I'm a little tired of poker.
He's off his stick. Don't pay any attention to him.
Peavy's all right. What's your proposal, Peavy?
Well, how about some nice brain ticklers? They're a lot of fun and nobody gets hurt.
Brain ticklers?
What do you mean, brain ticklers?
Well, I'll give you an example. That's a good one. A fellow comes home every day on the train. The train gets in at 5 o'clock. And every day his chauffeur meets the train to drive the fellow home.
He must have money.
He reaches home at,
Wish we could get him in our poker game.
Stop interrupting me, Floyd, please.
Yes, Floyd, stop interrupting.
Thank you. The train arrives at 5, and the chauffeur gets him home at 6 every day. But one day...
He must live quite a ways from the station.
He lives in a fashionable neighborhood, Floyd. Stop interrupting.
Yeah, stop interrupting. Now, go ahead, Phoebe.
Thank you. Now, one day the fellow takes an early train. He gets in at 4 o'clock instead of 5. So he decides to start walking home.
Do you think this will ever replace poker, Commissioner?
Now, fellas, let's give him a chance.
Is there much more of this, Peavy?
Just a little. The fellow starts walking, and after a while, along comes his chauffeur on his way to meet the 5 o'clock train. So he picks him up and drives him home, and he gets home just at his regular time. Now, the question is, how long did the fellow walk? Isn't that a dinger?
Well, I'll let you boys figure it out while I have another Coke.
Yeah, get me one too, will you, Floyd?
Yeah, me too, Floyd. Say, how about a song?
Yeah, let's have a song.
Oh, I feel just like a song.
Oh, fellows, aren't you going to solve the brain tickler?
Oh, that. Well, I didn't really get all the details, Peavy, the way everybody kept interrupting.
Yeah, I'll talk to you again, Mr. Gildersleeve. Yeah. This fellow comes home on the train every day.
Yes, Peavy, have a Coke and quit worrying about that rich commuter.
Thanks, Floyd. And his train gets in at 5 o'clock.
Oh, then the chauffeur drives him home.
Yeah, that's right. The chauffeur gets him home at 6 o'clock. But on this one particular day...
Excuse me just a moment, Peavy. Floyd, did you bring a new deck of cards tonight?
Yes, sir. Got them right in my pocket.
Fine. Sorry, Peavy. The chauffeur drives to the station every day at 6 o'clock.
No, he gets home at 6 o'clock.
Oh, I've got it. I know the answer.
You can't know the answer. I haven't finished stating the problem. The man usually arrives at 5, but one day he arrives at 4.
Oh, yes. Now, just a moment, Peavy, if you don't mind. Say, Floyd.
On that day, he starts walking home.
What is it, Commissioner?
His chauffeur starts at the usual time.
Wait a minute, Peavy. Fix me up another Coke, will you?
You bet.
Now, Peavy, sorry.
The chauffeur meets the man and drives him home.
Put a piece of ice in it, Floyd.
Okay.
Well, Peavy, what about the brain tickling?
Now, go to grass. You can tickle your own brain.
Well, here's your Coke, Commissioner.
Oh, thanks, Floyd. Ah. By George, it's a shame poor old Hooker has to miss all his fun. The club doesn't seem the same without it.
You're right, Commissioner. Doesn't seem fair for us to be having all this fun with him not here.
I think we ought to drink a toast to the judge's empty chair.
It's far from empty, Floyd. Mr. Gildersleeve is sitting in it.
Well, let's have the toast anyway. To absent friends.
To absent friends.
Ah, good old Hooker. Got a heart as big as all outdoors. And just as cold.
Floyd, how can you speak that way of our dear absent friend?
Just slipped out, Commissioner. I could have bit my tongue out as soon as I said it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I yield to no man in my admiration of Judge Hooker. As a gentleman, as a scholar, as a poker player...
He sings a pretty fair baritone, too, fellas.
Sings like a nightingale. A tone-deaf nightingale.
Say, how about a little song as a tribute to the judge?
Why, for that, we could do his old favorite. Oh, promise me that one day when I...
Oh, brother.
Oh.
I can't go on with it with him not here.
Say, how about the Banks of the Wabash? He always loved that.
Yeah, Wabash it is. Come on, play it, Floyd.
I'll just give us a chord.
All right, here we go.
Oh, the moonlight's fair tonight along the Wabash. From the fields there comes the breath of newborn hay. Through the sycamores the candlelights are gleaming. On the banks of the Wabash far away, oh, far away.
Oh, great, great. Let's do it again, huh? This one's really for Hooker. Oh, the moonlight! By George, it does a man good to get away from home once in a while. You know that, Peavy?
I dare say. I dare say.
Yeah? You want to get out oftener yourself, Peavy, you know it? You want to be like me.
Well, I didn't see that.
Sure, look at yourself, Peavy.
You go home every night, and what do? You read the paper, you listen to the radio a while, and then you go to bed. You're in a rut.
Yeah, pretty nice rut.
Not for me, boy. Say, isn't that Judge Hooker's car?
No, I wouldn't know.
Certainly it is. I'd know this fender anywhere.
They must be having quite a legal discussion in there.
Yeah, discussion nothing. If I know Hattie, she's hooked him into a cribbage game. The judge will never forgive me for this, Peavy.
Well, I guess I'll be going along. Good night, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Good night, Peavy. Thanks for your company.
The pleasure was mine.
Yes, sir. He's still in here.
Oh, promise me that one day you and I...
Hooker! Well, I had no idea I'd find you still here.
Well, I had a delightful evening, Gildy.
Huh?
And so have I, Throckmorton. And guess what?
What, Hattie?
The judge has been so charming, he's persuaded me to stay another few weeks.
Pearl!
What floor, Judge?
Oh, promise me that one day you and I...
Trouble. How do I do it? Well, so much for Gildersleeve. If you people don't mind, I'd like to talk for a minute about something more important. You know, there's a lot of money around these days. There's not much to spend it on. So it's a temptation to throw it away on stuff we don't really want. All I want to say is, don't. There's a man coming around to your house pretty soon with a better proposition. Most of us have someone pretty close to us in the war by now. The money we'd blow today without thinking could save his life tomorrow, if we stop to think. Look at the men in uniform you see on the street these days. The men who are fighting this war for us. They're kids, most of them. A lot of them have never even been away from home before. And they're a long way from home now. They need more than just weapons and training and food. They need a little comfort now and then, when it's possible. They need assurance that everything's being taken care of back home. They need diversion and rest from the strain of battle. They need care when they're wounded and blood when they've given theirs. All these things the Red Cross can give them. But it can give these things only if we give to the Red Cross. So when we're called upon, and it won't be long now, let's be ready. Not with an alibi, but with every cent we can scrape up. Show me any place where you can get more for your money. Good night, everybody. And think it over, will you?
From February of 1945, it's been The Great Gildersleeve with Aunt Hattie Stays On. In a moment, Barry Craig, confidential investigator with Death Buys a Bedroom, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Barry Craig, confidential investigator, was one of the few detective radio programs that had separate versions of it broadcast from both coasts. NBC produced the program from the New York studios from 1951 to 1954, then moved it to Hollywood, where it continued from 54 to 1955. William Gargan, who also played the better-known television and radio detective Martin Kane, was the voice of New York private eye Barry Craig, while Ralph Bell portrayed his associate, Lieutenant Travis Rogers. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and the case of Death Buys a Bedroom from July of 1954. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Murder is a human, just like anybody else.
Every once in a while, their work begins to tire them. They need a vacation, which isn't too much of a change for them. They kill time instead of people.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. The office where my license as a confidential investigator hangs is on Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue is in New York City. New York City in the summertime is a good place to go away from. I was going away from it, in the general direction of the Adirondacks and a week's fishing. I rarely catch any fish, which makes two parties to the deal very happy, the fish and me. And I hate fish. I was in the club car looking admiringly at a planter's punch when company came.
Would you have any objections if I sat here?
Would anybody object to Santa Claus dropping in?
Thank you. What's your name?
Barry Craig.
I'm Claire Roberts. What are you drinking?
I haven't started yet. It's almost too pretty to drink. It's a planter's punch.
Looks wonderful. Would you mind?
No. Oh, waiter.
Yes, sir?
One of these for the lady.
A planter's punch, sir, right away.
Where are you going, Barry?
The Adirondacks.
They're very tall mountains.
Well, I don't intend to climb any. What I had in mind was a small amount of fishing.
Oh, that's a wonderful coincidence.
It is?
I'm going fishing, too.
What?
Fish.
Oh, fine.
Barry, before the waiter gets back...
Yes?
Will you keep this for me?
This?
It's only a small envelope. Please, Barry.
Well, why do you...
give it back to me when...
Oh. Your drink, madam.
Thank you.
Will there be anything else, sir?
Not right now.
Thank you, sir.
What did you do with the envelope?
My breast pocket.
You're very sweet. And now let's drink. Oh, but Barry, watch out. You knocked the glass out of my hand.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose accidents will happen.
No accident.
What?
I spotted the waiter dropping something into your drink when he was bringing it.
Oh, no.
Hold it.
A little accident, sir?
That's the way it looks.
I'll get the lady another drink.
Now, don't bother. The lady isn't thirsty anymore.
Thank you, sir.
Come on, Claire.
I did want that drink.
Even if it was poison? I could have been wrong. Maybe all the waiter dumped into the drink was a pinch of nutmeg or something. I didn't think so, though.
I've taken a bedroom. Here it is. Would you like to come in for a bit?
Sure.
You're wondering about me, aren't you, Barry?
A little.
Was it nice?
It was puzzled.
Oh, you mean the envelope and the drink. I'd like to tell you what's in the envelope, but I don't dare.
Why not?
Because then you might become one of them.
One of who?
One of the people who want me to die.
She didn't go on to explain. There wasn't much conversation after that. She said she was tired. I said goodnight and went out of my bedroom. I've been careless and left the lights on.
But you didn't leave the lights on.
I didn't, huh?
I put them on.
Why?
I'm afraid of the dark, shall we say?
If you like.
Now, Mr. Craig, if it wouldn't trouble you too much, may I have the envelope Miss Roberts gave you?
It would trouble me too much.
I was being polite, but only superficially. The envelope, if you please.
I don't have it.
Mr. Craig, you may be under the impression that this gun I'm pointing at you is merely for display purposes. It isn't. It's a rather deadly weapon. If I must employ it on you, I shall.
Aboard a train filled with people?
Oh, come now, Mr. Craig. Surely you know enough about firearms to recognize a silencer, don't you? The only sound this gun will make when fired would resemble a cough.
I don't have a cold.
You were pleased to make a jest. I have smiled. Now, the envelope.
I haven't got it.
I'm not a child, Mr. Craig. I know Miss Roberts gave it to you.
You must have been snooping.
I would rather have that envelope from you alive, but I am prepared to forego my preferences and take it from you dead.
Well, stick to your preferences. Would you like to search me?
Take your jacket off.
Okay. And toss it to you?
Oh, no. Just drop it at your feet. Thank you. I move back against the wall.
A careful boy.
An explanation of why, in my profession, I am still alive. Your jacket.
Mm-hmm. No envelope.
No envelope. Mr. Craig.
Yeah?
What is it?
I don't remember.
Very well. You have exactly 5 minutes in which to remember what you did with that envelope. 5 minutes in which to remember or die.
The gentleman with the silencer on his revolver was a tired-looking man, beautifully dressed right down to the gloves he wore. It occurred to me they'd never find his prints on the gun he was getting ready to use on me. I felt bitter about that. I also began wondering how smart I'd been hiding Claire's envelope in Claire's bedroom.
You haven't very much time left.
I haven't got the envelope either. But before you knock me off, maybe it would be more polite if you mentioned your name.
It's Wiley, if that helps you any.
Wiley? Doesn't help at all. Well, come right in.
Don't tell.
Sorry.
Mr. Craig?
I'm Craig.
I have a telegram for you.
Fine. You'd better wait. There might be an answer. Mr. Wiley here is leaving anyway.
Yes, of course. Leaving your bedroom, Mr. Craig. Not the train.
Well, let's get at the telegram. Hey. Nothing here but a blank sheet of paper.
That's right, Mr. Craig.
Maybe it's right, but it isn't usual.
Well, I thought it would be the best excuse for getting the other gentleman out of here.
Any excuse would have been the best. I don't understand how you come in on this, though.
Miss Roberts sent me.
For what?
The envelope she asked you to hold for her. She would like to have it now.
Of course. Conductor.
Yes?
Well, what time is it?
Let me see. There's 10:50.
Thanks.
Now, if you'll give me the envelope.
That's a nice costume you're wearing.
Costume?
Sure. I've never seen a real conductor wear a wristwatch before. He must have had a glass jaw. He went down and out quietly and quickly. I worried for a couple of seconds. Maybe conductors have started wearing wristwatches. But then I stopped worrying. Because after I went through his pockets, I found out his name was James Bryan. His shoulder holster told me he preferred a .32 caliber revolver with its serial number filed off. And the haircut under the borrowed conductor's cap said that Mr. Bryan had very recently been a guest at a penitentiary. I left the phony conductor in my bedroom and decided to visit Claire Roberts and hers. It was maybe time I found out exactly what was in that envelope. It was a vestibule between the car she had her bedroom in and mine. A vestibule that was occupied by a club car waiter who tried to drug or poison Claire Roberts. A waiter who'd finished with waiting, though. Somebody had buried a knife in his back.
Who is it?
Barry Craig.
Just a minute. It's pretty late.
I've been keeping in touch with the time.
Has anything happened?
Quite a lot has happened. You better let me in.
Of course.
Thank you.
You still have the envelope?
No.
Barry!
Don't worry. I know where it is.
Where?
In a safe place. Claire, what's inside that envelope?
I can't tell you. It's not my secret.
I wonder if you realize exactly what kind of a secret it is.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
It's led, among other things, to an attempt on my life.
Oh, no.
It has also led to imposture. Led me to knock a man down, and finally, very finally, it's led to the death of a man.
Which man?
The waiter who tried to gimmick your drink.
But the waiter? But I didn't even know him.
Maybe not, but he knew you.
I can't help that.
You can tell me what's inside the envelope.
I can't. Believe me, Barry.
Could you tell Mr. Wiley about it? I see you recognize the name.
He's the head of them, the people after the...
The what?
Barry, he's evil. He's terribly evil.
So is that line. Claire, would it interest you to know that among those aboard this train is the next convict named James Bryan? I didn't catch her as she fell. I let her fall. She hit pretty hard, which told me at least one thing. The faint was genuine. I didn't rush to revive her. There were things to be done first. One of them was to get her suitcase open. I did. Well, there were clothes in it. Maybe I was a cad for intruding on a beautiful girl's privacy. Any thoughts I might have had about that didn't last long. For a girl who was going fishing, Claire Roberts had packed the wrong thing. A couple of silk dresses, sweaters, odds and ends of nylon, and a number of high-heeled shoes. So I shut the suitcase. It would have been fun thinking of how Claire would look in the various clothes she was carrying, but I didn't have time for fun. One thing was pretty obvious. With the clothes she'd brought, whatever she was going fishing for, it wasn't fish.
Barry?
Yeah?
I must have fainted.
You did. Here, I'll give you a hand up.
Thanks. It was silly, fainting like that.
It was genuine. Who's James Bryan?
I don't know.
Just the mention of his name made you faint.
Well, I meant I don't know what he's doing on this train. He's a gangster, Barry.
Uh-huh.
He kills people.
In which case, he ought to be in jail. Why isn't he?
Well, he was in jail. Barry, he must have escaped.
That's not legal.
You're sure he's on this train?
Very sure. He's the jet I knocked out a little while ago.
Well, where is he?
In my bedroom. You're about to suggest I get a half a dozen conductors together and arrest Bryan?
No.
No?
Well, I mean, well, of course he's an escaped convict and all that, but Barry, the door is closed. Somebody's opening.
That light, put it out quick. The shots missed Claire. They missed me. They were, after all, shots in the dark. They did wake a lot of conductors, though. These were genuine conductors. They all carried nice, big watches, which made them helpful so far as giving us the right time. But beyond that, they didn't have any good ideas, so they left.
Barry?
Yes?
You didn't tell them about the envelope I gave you.
Neither did you.
You didn't tell them about the dead waiter, either.
Waste of time. They all came through the vestibule where I'd seen him.
But they didn't mention anything about...
A dead waiter? No. Which means he isn't with us anymore.
Somebody threw him off the train?
Has to be.
Bryan?
Well, that's a question Bryan could answer better than I. I think I'll go look him up.
I don't want you to leave me.
There's a conductor on watch outside this bedroom. He'll be safe enough.
Maybe, but will you?
I didn't waste any time thinking up an answer to that question. I couldn't think of a good one anyway. I did hesitate for a minute outside my bedroom door and then decided that he who hesitates is a hesitator. Mr. Bryan, I discovered, had left. Maybe I should have been sorry about that. I wasn't. Time was 20 past midnight. In a few hours, we'd be reaching the Adirondacks and the fishing lakes that Claire was heading for, according to her. I wondered if going to sleep was the smart thing to do. Well, I could brush my teeth anyway, I decided. It's good for your teeth. By the time I got my toothbrush out, though, I changed my mind. I'd packed a blue one. The one I found in my suitcase was yellow. I lifted it to my nose and put it right down again. Bristles had been thoroughly soaked in something I strongly suspected was a deadly poison. Poison that gives off the odor of almonds. Come in. I'm sorry I have to barge in on you so late, but...
Well, that's all right, Mr. Craig.
As head conductor on this train, you might be able to help.
Anything else happen?
No, but it was intended to. That's not important, though. There's a Mr. Wiley on this train. Could you tell me where he is?
Well, if he's reserved a compartment in the bedroom, yes. Give me a moment?
Sure.
Those shots at you and the lady are dreadful.
Well, they're not so bad. They all missed.
Mr. Thomas Wiley has a compartment B in car 437.
Thanks.
Is that all you wanted?
It'll have to do for right now, except, we're on our way to Martindale. Have they had anything exciting happen up there recently?
Martindale? Well, it seems that the postmaster's wife and the grocery clerk...
Didn't exactly mean along those lines. I meant any crimes, holdups, or...
I see. Well, yes, there was something. It happened several weeks ago.
Well, what was it?
The payroll robbery, it seems to me. A man killed, too, the watchman.
Any criminals?
Well, the police are still looking for them, as far as I know. They work pretty quick. The reason I remember about it is they... The train was held up for a couple of hours while the police went through it, looking for the payroll money.
Would they find it?
No, they didn't. They couldn't hold anybody either. There was no proof, you see.
Large payroll?
Well, it's for one of the lumber concerns back in the mountains. Pretty large, I'd say.
Too large to get into a small envelope, huh?
Oh, yes.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, I've been glad to answer your questions, Mr. Craig.
I wonder if Mr. Wiley will be. I had plenty to think about while finding compartment B, car 437. By the time I found it, I stopped thinking.
Who's there?
Barry Craig.
I wasn't really expecting you.
Weren't you? Better take your hand out of that pocket before I come in. There's a conductor in this car. He wouldn't approve of shooting passengers.
Very well. I'll disarm for the moment. There, guns out of the way. Come in.
Thanks.
How to what do I owe this visit?
The fact that I didn't brush my teeth.
You're being obscure.
Blunt.
Someone tampered with your toothbrush?
You did.
You have proof of that?
Enough to satisfy me. Among other things, how did you know it was the toothbrush, not the toothpaste that had been tampered with?
Lucky guess.
Maybe not so lucky. Wiley... Did you know that James Bryan is on this train? He is.
I find that of no interest.
You're a liar. Have you seen that waiter recently? The one you bribed to drug Claire Roberts' drink?
You're making quite a number of unfounded assumptions.
No assumptions, not unfounded. Have you?
I don't choose to spend my time with waiters.
Too bad you didn't spend more time with this one.
Oh, why?
You might have talked him out of testifying against you.
You're lying.
You really think so?
I don't know what the waiter may have told you, but whatever it was, it's not true. He's a blackmailer.
That could be. Miss Roberts and I were shot at less than an hour ago.
Well, I've been in this bedroom for the last 2 hours.
Got any witnesses to prove that?
No, you could hardly expect.
True enough. Mr. Wiley, how do you feel about payrolls?
I've no particular feelings about them.
We're reaching Martindale in a few hours. You're getting off there?
Why should I be traveling there otherwise?
For the same reason that Claire Roberts is, or James Bryan is.
And that reason being?
The payoff. I left Mr. Wiley. His conversation lacked frankness. I wandered through the train looking for Mr. Bryan. I didn't think he'd be out in public view. He wasn't. I returned to my bedroom, shaved, and twiddled my thumb. The only result of that was that half hour before arrival, I almost sprained my left thumb.
Barry.
I was hoping you wouldn't be asleep.
I couldn't. Come in. Barry, I'm frightened.
You've got reason enough. Someone's tried to drug you and to shoot you.
I know.
You haven't asked me for that envelope again.
I think maybe you better keep it.
Until when?
Where are you going to be staying?
The Green Lake Lodge.
Oh, do you know what the phone number is?
Green Lake 465.
465. I'll phone you after we get in, as soon as I think it's safe, and then we can meet and...
You're sure you'll phone me?
Well, of course I'll want that envelope. After all I've gone through because of it, you...
Okay, then. You'll phone me.
Oh,
Well, looks like we've arrived. On time.
Yes.
I think maybe I better get that envelope now.
Get it?
Yeah. I slipped it behind the seat cushion here.
What?
Uh-huh. Untouched.
You hid it here?
Sure. Safest place for it. The last place anyone would think of my hiding it in. After they'd seen you give it to me in the club car.
Barry, you are clever.
Now, you better leave first. I'll follow after a while. And Claire?
Yes?
Give me a ring sometime, huh? Claire got off the train and I watched her. Wiley got off immediately after she did. He didn't follow her. Brian also must have left the train, but he didn't show in the open. However, he didn't follow Claire either. Nobody, it was seen, was interested in where she was going. But when I got into a cab, it was a different proposition.
Mister?
Yeah?
Ain't none of my business, but there's a cab following us.
There is? Well, you're right. Matter of fact, it's even more complicated than that.
It is?
Yeah. There's another cab following that one. It added up neatly enough. Wiley was trailing me. Brian was trailing Wiley. I didn't think the hotel management would care for either of them. Therefore, cabby.
Yep.
Pull over to the curb.
Okay.
Now wait for me, huh?
Okay.
Craig, have fun following me?
Look here, Craig.
I suggest you look back.
Back? Brian.
Yeah?
Brian. What are you after?
Stop kidding.
You're not the only one who has a gun. You dirty...
Take it easy, boys. You've got too big an audience for fireworks. Three cab drivers, me.
They don't bother me. You don't either. Even if I owe you something for that sock on the jaw, but we'll forget it the minute you hand over the envelope.
You can have it.
Now, wait a moment.
You can have it, too, Mr. Wiley. Both of you can have it. One condition, though.
What's that?
That it's opened here and now.
No.
No? No envelope.
Don't be a fool, Brian. He could have opened it at any time if he'd wanted to. We've got nothing to lose.
Well. Okay.
Thanks. This is the envelope given to me by Claire Roberts.
So it would appear.
It ain't been opened.
Fine. I will now open it. And we discover, to somebody's surprise, maybe, that the envelope was...
empty.
Right.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Hey, wait. Craig, how can I be sure you didn't open it before I...
You can be sure because Mr. Wiley is leaving.
Oh, yeah. You must have figured... So long, Craig.
Goodbye. Or maybe only till we meet again... Hotel, checked in, looked at the lake, and went to sleep. I slept for quite a while. No phone call disturbed me. Towards evening, I got up and performed a couple of errands. One took very little time. The other consisted of crawling under the baggage counter at the railroad station. The baggage clerk understood.
Clerk?
Yes, miss?
Will you get my bag for me, please? Here's the check.
Oh, thank you, miss. Get it for you right away.
They ought to build... higher counters.
Barry.
Hello, Claire.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for you to phone me about the envelope.
Oh, I did phone several times. The line was busy.
Funny. Because there's no such number.
Oh. You still have the envelope?
No. I turned it over to Wiley and Brian.
Oh.
Don't look so hopeful. They opened it right away. The baggage check you just handed the clerk wasn't in it, as Wiley and Brian had thought.
I admit I hoped they'd go after you for the empty envelope.
They did. I'm a fair-sized decoy, Claire, but not made out of wood. I realized the envelope you gave me was empty. I also realized, after I had had a look at your suitcase, that you weren't coming up here for the fishing. You were carrying the suitcase as a blind. You came here for only one thing.
Here's your bag, Biff.
For that.
You know what's in it?
Sure. A payroll, Claire.
Okay, baby, hand it over.
Brian!
You didn't think I was so dumb I couldn't figure the hell out on a baggage check?
No, I...
Give me that bag. I already killed a couple of guys for it.
The waiter on the train among them?
I had to make sure Claire didn't pass the baggage check to him. Don't worry, this confession ain't gonna do you much good.
It's a large gun you have there.
Large enough to take care of you and the clerk. Now hand over that bag, Claire. Once I was dope enough to pass you the bag of check when the cops was after me. Not anymore.
Oh, all right, all right.
I don't think so.
Hmm?
My hands are below the level of the counter, Brian. What did you think I was doing while I was waiting for Claire and you to show up?
What?
Practicing this. Funny they never realize that the guns they use on other people can be used on them. Oh, don't go away, Claire. You've got a date. It didn't take the police long to arrive. They took Claire with them and Brian. Brian wasn't badly hurt. He'd be in perfect health by the time they got around to electrocuting him. As for me, I went back to the lodge. I was a little sorry about Claire. The way it turned out, all I was going to wind up with was fish. The next week's story, For Love of Murder, a jail cell built for two becomes a honeymooner's cottage. When a prisoner of love squares a triangle by simply eliminating the competition. Good night, folks. See you next week.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Death by the Bedroom, was written by John Robert. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Arthur Jacobson. Also heard were Betty Lou Gerson as Claire, Byron Kane as the waiter, Jack Moyles as Wiley, Lou Krugman as Brian, and Victor Rodman as the conductor. Eddie King speaking.
From July of 1954, it's been Barry Craig, confidential investigator, with Death Buys a Bedroom. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Yesteryear, but be with us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes. Use our imagination, comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big band swings.